to go into a work session on House Bill 5035, the Public Employees Retirement System. And first of all, we were going to have Representative Hill, and he's coming. Is that my understanding?
Yes, he's on his way, Madam Chair.
Okay. And there he is.
There he is.
There he is, as we speak. Boy, that was good timing, Representative Hill. Good morning.
Good morning.
You have the floor if you want to put your name on the record and go ahead and share your report with us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Representative Jim Hill, House District 5, Chair of the Advancing and Government Subcommittee. Colleagues, today I want to come before you and bring to you the subcommittee's recommendation on the Public Employees Retirement System computer system. We are making a recommendation that the budget be reduced to $1 with very specific language in the bill stating that the Public Employees Retirement System, the development of their OPIS system, come back to the Joint Legislative Information Management and Technology Committee and the Emergency Board with a specific plan. In working with DAS and LFO staff, we have specifically come to a conclusion that we think in terms of the project that PERS was undertaking is at a tremendous risk of failure in terms of we don't have any surety in terms of how the project has been, the project plan has been developed, that any of the discrete components would be successful. And with the Department of Administrative Services estimating the project costs to complete the entire project at almost $100 million, this is a significant investment. It is public employees retirement benefit dollars, and that we need to be very prudent with those dollars and to ensure that we have success. And so the committee admonished the Public Employees Retirement System to come back with a plan, and that plan be incremental. They need to first focus on a system to replace the RIMS system, which is the system which provides the calculations for retirement benefits. This is a significant issue for PERS as more and more baby boomers will be retiring, so there will be a number, increased numbers of retirees going through the system, and this present system is at risk of failure. And so we understand in terms of that the agency needs to embark on this project. We don't think, though, that the integrated plan that they had developed is the appropriate plan, and it bears too much risk, and that they should come back with a different plan, one where the discrete components that they had put together in the overarching plan be broken up into subcomponents where we can measure risk and we can work to mitigate risk. They were told explicitly to come back with a plan that the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division concurred in, and at which time we would then look at raising the limitation if we're still in session here or at eBoard, so that they can accomplish the plan. They don't they indicate they don't need any additional dollars in this present biennium. They have sufficient dollars to rework the plan.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Any questions of the committee? Did IRMD or yourself about any system that might work with what this department needs?
No, I mean, they have gone through a process where they have expended some $13 million going through developing business rules and defining the business rules, which is a necessary step going forward. So they've got a lot of the base elements that are required to go forward. The disagreement comes in terms of the level of acceptable risk associated with a development plan that the PERS development plan has a lot of dollars being expended at the front end with no clear deliverables, and that the only way you know that you're going to be successful is if you complete the entire project rather than having discrete sub-projects that are completed, and then when bolted together all at the end, they all work together. That way, we can be assured of limiting our risk and our exposure to risk in that way. And so I think that's the path that my subcommittee would feel more comfortable in. I think it's the path that Department of Administrative Services would feel more comfortable in going forward.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Representative Butler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hill, in the expenditure that we've incurred to this particular point, we have been able to define some of the rules and parameters of the system. Is any of that at risk at this particular point as we move from as we integrate from one platform to another, or has that mostly been for the benefit of just defining where it is that we're at right now and how we would step by baby steps into the next generation?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I believe the best way to describe in terms of the level of effort which has gone forward is that to understand the present system. The present system is a hodgepodge that has been developed over a number of years. It's Excel spreadsheets, and a lot of the knowledge resides in the people who process these retirement claims. And so they've gone through a process to define those business rules and put it on paper, defining that so that they could then build an automated system to accomplish the tasks. And so in terms of the benefit, I mean, they've gone forward with that, and I think in terms of I don't know how much of what they've already expended is, you know, not recoverable, but I think a good portion is valuable, and they will use it. I don't have any disagreement in terms of the breadth of what they want to do. It sounds like a very nice project to undertake, but I think in terms of the only way to assure that is that you get the base components, the statutory required minimums done, is to complete the entire project is too risky. And especially when there's a huge disagreement about some $40 million and what the cost is. DAS estimated about $100 million, PERS still insists that it's only a $60 million project. And so that's a huge, wide discrepancy.
Just follow up in a different area, but and my recollection is they're also asking for some levels of hardware in various portions of the of their operation, that their budget request does, and my recollection was that the hardware that they're requesting, and basically PCs, which are certainly capable of running Excel spreadsheets, did you by any chance take a look at that that request?
Well, this system would be built, I believe, on if I remember correctly, the Sun platform, which is a Unix-based system, and so. What the technology is that the system runs on isn't important, because I think in terms of the development cycle, you may end up on a different version of the hardware at the end of when you initially begins it, because of the technology development paths that exist out there. So I'm less worried about what the hardware technology is that they're employing and more concerned about the breadth of the development and how that development is strung together.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Other questions, Representative Hill?
Yes,
Representative Hayden.
Representative Hill, on your letter to the chair and this committee, your last paragraph says be concerned with PERS management with respect to this project, and then do you then segue into a discussion here, a one-line discussion of classification and reclassification of management positions? Does that deal with another topic in this project?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I think in terms of deeply concerned about the management at PERS and their ability to understand that the legislature has concerns about this and the legitimate concerns. The sense that I took from the discussions was that they are resigned to the fact that we were going to give them a dollar. They don't accept it, they don't understand, and we think, and they think that we're wrong. They seem to be the only people in the room who think we're wrong. And so I don't know what to do about that. So I don't think there was any appreciation as to why we were taking these actions and why we were concerned. And so I think that is problematic as we go forward. And so I think that's an issue for the PERS board to deal with in the government.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, so their attitude toward this project is problematic of a wider universe of administrative philosophies.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, yes.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, Representative Hill, thank your committee on behalf of us for your hard work.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, in Representative Hill's memorandum, there's a suggested addition to the budget bill. If you see that, and we've put in italicized or the 2003 Legislative Assembly. I would suggest we take out any date reference and just say, or the Legislative Assembly. This is where they're, so that in case they come back.
Prior to the 2000, yes, so we delete emergency board or the legislative, just take out 2003.
Just take out 2003, okay. So it would read, the whole thing would read, notwithstanding any other law, no more than $1 may be expended during the biennium beginning July 1, 2001 for the development or implementation of the Oregon Pension Administration System project without prior review by the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology and expenditure limitation approved by the Emergency Board or the Legislative Assembly.
Okay.
And we would put that in statute in the bill.
Okay. Next balance.
Madam Chair, we are in work session. Is it appropriate to go ahead at this time with a budget note addition, or would you prefer to take that with all other activity in mass?
No, we can go ahead and adopt that budget note as well if there's committee approval.
I think the third budget note, is that the one?
Number
two is the one that has to do with the review of the core agency functions. This is the budget note that we, these three budget notes have been reviewed and approved by the co-chairs. The second budget note is one that requested the Department of Administrative Services to conduct a review of the agency's organization structure and review of the activities and classifications of all authorized positions with respect to, and particularly with an eye towards what the statutory requirements of deliberative services are. Department of Administrative Services is aware of this and has reviewed it and is ready to begin it when the bill is in law. Or even before.
So this would be a fourth budget note, the notwithstanding any other law, is that correct?
No, the notwithstanding any other law, sir, is that it will be in the bill itself.
Oh, within the bill itself, not as a matter of budget.
No, this was at the direction of Chair Hill. He he expressed his concerns about where the agency was heading and its apparent. It's resistance to this, so he wanted to make it very clear in the bill.
So that would be, as it relates to an amendment to House Bill 5035.
That is correct.
Where that is not a budget note and becomes part of the bill, and we are in work session, Madam Chair, I would move that we adopt the, and I'm going to call it the Dash 1 Amendment for lack of a better nomenclature, the Dash 1 Amendment as proposed by the Committee on Advancing Government.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion? Senator Dukes.
One of the things that occurs to me by reading through the budget notes is that we have several different legislative groups taking pieces of this. And while they all had their expertise and the piece we're giving to them, I served on the audit committee last interim, and there needs to be, I think, some coordination. I hate to see audit doing one piece in a vacuum and technology doing a piece in a vacuum and the emergency board conceivably doing a piece in something of a vacuum because it would run through a subcommittee as opposed to those substantive committees. And I'm not sure just what the link should be, and perhaps staff can help me with that, but I would like to see, this is a huge project, and everybody seems to be, you know, to agree that there are potential major problems there. And while we don't seem to have stepped over the line yet, we're always just about to. I'm wanting some oversight group, and I don't know if it should be maybe audit because they're a broader group. I mean, we're talking management as well as technology.
And it's my understanding from what Representative Hill testified to when he first got here is that his committee's working very closely with IRMD, Information Resources Management Department. So that committee isn't working in a vacuum. They are working very closely with IRMD. And your part about the audit, Joint Legislative Audit Committee, I assume you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much they're involved. Perhaps Dallas could share.
It is
for them, too.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, two of the three budget notes mention the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. That's number two that asks for the review of all positions and classifications it wants to report to the Audit Committee. That wording could be changed to work with and report to. The third one, of course, is requesting the Audit Committee to look at some operations.
I'm actually comfortable with the Audit Committee, Madam Chair, because we're getting into more than just technology. If we were just technology, I'd say the Technology Committee, the subcommittee that Representative Hill has, I mean, they've been doing this for years. Well, he hasn't, his group hasn't, but they know what they're doing, that's fine. But there are management issues as well. And so I'm personally comfortable with the Audit Committee. Other people may have other ideas.
May I just ask a question?
I
see that we've got relative to budget notes 2 and 3. We do have the Legislative Audit Committee, Joint Legislative Audit Committee, involved there, whereas the Dash 1 amendment that is before us right now is really moving forward with the expenditure for the OPUS system. Under the after our prior review and working with the Legislative Committee on Information and Technology before they begin the expenditure. Now, before they do that, then they move from there to the e-board, and I think that the Audit Committee, I don't know that they, and you've served on the Audit Committee, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and interim senator, do they make their recommendations to the e-board?
They make their recommendations to whomever they believe is appropriate. Sometimes it's another substantive committee. Sometimes it's the e-board. They're a pretty general group, and so they have the ability to take action on their own because they're a substantive committee, but they also pass things off if that seems to be the most appropriate. I just, for any other agent, any other set of problems, I think I would say let all of the respective groups handle them. But these issues are also interrelated. If there is a management problem, it is intricately tied into the computer system. And the computer problem also is going to tie us into all of the other pieces. So that's why I was just hoping that there would be somebody who made sure all the pieces were coordinated. And maybe that will happen on its own, and maybe it won't.
If I may, Madam Chair, I would suggest a slight change of wording to the second budget note on requesting the review of the administrative services. On the third, from the bottom line, where it says the Department of Administrative Services is requested to report, I would change that to is requested to work with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and report to the 2003.
Inserting the words work with and.
Work with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and report to the 2003 legislature. So it gives some clear, that ties, I believe, some oversight by the audit committee into the conduct of this portion of the review.
It does achieve it for this. I don't know how you tie it together with...
And that's the concern is...
And perhaps they should also report to the the technology committee.
Okay.
Then at least all of the groups that were working on it would be aware.
How about have them work with them also?
Sure.
So work with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and the Joint Legislative Committee? Mm-hmm. And the information manager?
And then report to the 2003 yeah. legislature.
What would the time of it, Senator Butler, is work with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and the Technology Committee.
And report to the legislature. I don't believe the Department of Administrative Services would have a problem with that because it is already going to be doing that with its Information Resource Management Division people. This puts in Budget and Management Group and the Human Resources Group. So.
And report to
the 3003. I've got them.
Okay. So agreed. That third line would be the Administrative Services is requested to work with the JLCIMP and the Joint Legislative Audit Committee
and report
to
the 2003 legislature.
2003 legislature. Senator Dukes, is your concern relative to budget note, proposed budget note number 3, the same then? Again, if we could work those together.
On the dash one? Or are you number 3 budget
note? Number 3 budget note at this point.
I didn't have the same level of concern about that
okay.
one.
Because that doesn't reach in as far as what the direction that the e-government advancing e-government group was looking for.
Now that's the second budget note only that we corrected.
Just the second is the only one that was modified.
Okay. Going back to our motion that we have before us on the dash one amendments, notwithstanding any other law, that paragraph on over there, Senator Dukes, where we omitted the year 2001, that
mm-hmm.
date.
2003.
Is that, does that answer your concerns there as well?
I think they got everybody in here.
Yeah, because that goes into the e-board following
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And this also does set a separate $1 expenditure limitation in the bill also.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to this language.
If we figure it all out, we can put money in there and they can
right.
move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Any further discussion on the motion by Representative Butler? Any objection? If not, so moved.
Well, they'll all be part of dash one. We'll take them in sequence because I have some other suggestions. To go back to my memo, you have before you my memorandum on recommendations to it, the budget. In the first paragraph,
that's this document.
It's my memorandum to you. It's dated the 19th. I passed out to committee members last week. The first one would be to reclassify. Currently in the budget request is $1,004,000. In debt service, which is currently non-limited in the budget. I believe it should be transferred to limitation, and that my recommendation is to transfer it from non-limited to limit expenditure limitation for legislative oversight, and to also put it separately in the budget bill. Then, in addition, because of concerns with the deferred compensation plan is being blended in with the rest of the operating budget, I would recommend segregating, and this amount was provided by FERS, $1,421,513 of expenditure limitation for the deferred compensation plan, also in the budget bill, separate that in the budget bill. So in effect, what we would have would be four lines of expenditure limitation, one for the project of a dollar, one for the debt service, one for the deferred compensation plan, and the balance would be for the rest of the administrative operations of the agency. So those are my recommendations, just moving some money and highlighting it in the budget bill.
Any questions about that segment before we go on? Okay.
Then we'll be walking through kind of the sequence of their packages, but our recommendation was to make a minor adjustment in package 010 by $12. This is to reflect the reduction in the PERS contribution rate. Staff's recommendation was to follow the recommendations of Representative Hill's subcommittee, which you have already done. The next recommendation has to do with their kind of built in their base budget. It was a number of things, and we have recommended some changes in that. One of them was to reduce it by $69,406 for changes in the reduction in PERS rate. The DAS, Department of Administrative Services, I'm going to owe you some money, Representative Butler. The HRSD assessment, the Attorney General hourly rate reduction, co-chairs, 1% reduction in discretionary services and supplies and capital outlays, and the additional 1% reduction in out-of-state travel. All of that amounts to $69,406 in their base. We are also recommending some specific adjustments in the base budget that I've highlighted. The first one was to eliminate 5 one-on-one retirement counselor positions and related services and supplies and personnel costs, and I provided a discussion. The that was to try and keep a cap on the growth in the number of staff, and using PERS own budget document when under House Bill 3182 they're required to come forward with a 10% reduction, and in their very first item that they provided for consideration of reduction in their budget document was individual counseling positions. There currently are 12 in there. They have approximately 58 counselors, retirement counselor one, retirement counselor two positions, and a number of other program technicians. So this was a recommendation. This is staff's recommendation, and that it would reduce the budget by. Oh, this is that reduction where they offered up their first was in, under Section A in their budget document, where under reductions that are required to be presented under House Bill 3182, the very first one that they offered up is in Section A, the yellow tab. Click the page, you go right there at the very top, page 2. As individual counseling. There was a great deal of concern. Further on down, there's a budget, there's a package that requested some additional internal audit position and other positions, and there was the subcommittee was supportive of that, but the growth in staff has staff has grown quite a bit in the past few years, and there was a lot of concern about the nature and extent of delivery of services. So this is staff's recommendation to help balance out at least the growth in FTE with by taking some positions where there was concerns about the nature and extent of the counseling and using those positions for strengthening the infrastructure that was felt necessary in a separate package.
Excuse me, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I understand what the recommendation is. There are still remaining 58 counselors and 11 program technicians if these 5 positions cease to exist.
There would be 53 counselors and 11.
53 counselors. So one of the questions that has arisen is if these 5 positions are not approved or are eliminated, then there still remain 53 counselors and 11 program technicians, so counseling is available. We're talking about the level of counseling and the availability time-wise.
That is correct.
One of the things that I had a lot of trouble with during the presentation was I never heard from the agency any recommendation or any willingness to explore alternatives in the counseling program. I understand from speaking with people about how valuable the counseling is, and I understand that completely, and I wouldn't want to do anything that eliminated the counseling, but it seems to me with 53 positions and 11 program technicians, the counseling isn't eliminated. But I didn't hear anything from the agency that suggested any willingness to look at it, new delivery mechanisms. And being a freshman, I'm looking for education if there was something that I missed.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, that is staff's assessment also, that there has been no appreciable presentation of alternatives or consideration of alternatives. Last session, Representative Butler chaired this subcommittee, and he had this discussion with them that they needed to consider alternative levels and methods of delivery of services. And it was sort of a, not an admonition, but something for thought. We've not seen that, and this is staff's recommendation as a result.
But just a follow-up.
Representative
Johnson. But a counseling program still exists.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hayden.
Just a question, Mr. Chair. In very recent history, there was a huge number of people retiring, and I'm sure that put a great deal of burden on the counseling staff. However, that seems to have moderated now. Many fewer people are retiring. We're past that bell-shaped curve. We're past that bulge. It would seem to me that there would be not quite as acute a need for quite so many retirement counselors if fewer people are retiring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, members of the committee, we've seen a drop-off now because there was a big bulge of those getting in when the earnings were very good. They expect it to creep up again as the baby boomers start to retire, but there was a huge, I think people had retired maybe a little bit ahead of when they had originally planned, so that put a lot of stress in the system, but we expect it to build up again.
Mr. Chairman, over what period of time, Dallas?
I don't have specifics on it.
But not a year, 5 years, 10 years?
I would think in the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay. All right, so something that something the next subsequent legislative sessions could deal with if we needed to add back staff.
Well, yes, certainly, and I think that as we get into the recommendations that Legislative Fiscal Office is making, you'll find that audio-visual and other teleconferencing is strongly recommended that they modernize the method in which they're delivering the services to the members, and there's a certain amount of risk that comes with moving outside of the non-core mission. Once you move away from the core mission of the agency and begin to do a certain amount of counseling and those kinds of additional activities provided to your members, then you assume a certain amount of risk for those folks, and it's an area where you have within the industry people who are skilled professionals that can go in and do this, and other pension programs. I don't know about other state pension programs that they do it as much. I think we actually had some testimony indicating that other state pension plans did not provide as much counseling as we are doing within the state of Oregon. I believe Dallas indicated something about the state of Hawaii that very little additional after the fact service is given. In other words, that people are given an option, a menu option, and they make that selection with their family as opposed to with a counselor, and we put ourselves less at risk, both in terms of the amount of money that we put into it up front and giving the counseling, as well as the after-the-fact risk of what happens when they come back and grandma dies, 15 days after she signed all of the documents and has received her first check. And rather than selecting the 180-month option, which we would have received another 179 checks, man, we didn't even think about that. And you should have known that grandma wasn't feeling well the day after you met with her.
We use grandpa instead of grandma.
Right, I'm sorry.
Our next adjustment in the base.
Madam Chair, before we leave that one, that's all right. A couple of things. One, they assume no responsibility for it whatsoever. I had a constituent who was counseled that he could retire, and he did. Then they decided he couldn't. he couldn't either go back and get his job, nor he could he convince them to send him money. And we said, but you had a counselor. And they said, but our counselors only offer guidance. You're on your own when you sign on that dotted line. But before that, the
question... makes me wonder whether we're going to be funding any of the 53 at that point.
That's a good point.
A very wholesome feeling.
I was curious. These five are referred to as one-on-one counselors. So I take it we have more than one type of counseling available. Could you tell me what that is? And of these 53 that are going to be left, what kind of counselors are they?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, members of the committee, they provide group counseling sessions. That's principally it, group counseling over the phone.
How many one-on-ones will be left?
According to the documentation, seven.
Seven for the entire state. Perhaps the video conferencing will help.
Well, I just would say that I think that this video conferencing is something that I'm hoping all agencies will better utilize, Senator. And when you consider that someone from AROC, Oregon, which is quite a ways away, and probably Representative Butler's district, a long ways to come for a personal one-on-one conference to Salem, so it isn't really equitable for all our retirees. No questions? Okay.
The next recommended adjustment to the base is for the co-chair's 1% reduction in discretionary services and supplies. That's a reduction of $40,845. We noticed that in the base budget there was a very, very high amount for telecommunications that they weren't using. So we are recommending a reduction to a more reasonable level. That this would leave the reduction here of $424,000 would leave $525,000 in telecommunications. If they start to need more than that because of video conferencing, they can come back to the emergency board and request additional limitation. But we think that $525,000 is sufficient given the reduction in long-term, at least telephone rates and the like for right now. Then of that savings, if you'll remember, they had requested additional $276,000 for Attorney General costs in a option package. We are instead recommending providing an additional $200,000 of limitation within the base by shifting some of the, in other words, using telecommunication savings to pay for additional AG's costs. And here we, instead of the $276,000, we recommended $200,000 in part to encourage them to think about managing the use of the AG, and in part acknowledge a little bit of a reduction in the AG's rates.
That reminds me of a question I wanted to ask earlier that Senator Dukes brought up about. Is it my understanding that we do not have any lawsuits ever on advice they're given? Is that correct, or do you know this? I'm just wondering what the Attorney General fees are for it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Attorney General's fees, they're being sued by employers and by employees for past actions on distribution of earnings. So they're being sued by both sides. My observations at board meetings is that the board always acts. It always has an attorney general and deputy in attendance during its board meetings and its deliberations. It also has a number of claims that become contested because of, for different reasons, the retirement amount wasn't what it was promised to be originally, or some other claims. Also, a lot of contested cases on disability hearings, and they're required to go through this process, and it does consume a bit of time, and the Attorney General is involved, I think, with good cause, because they try not to set precedent that would be damaging to the system in the future. It has Attorney Generals. It uses them when it develops the rules. It is starting to understand that its rules, sometimes lack of rules and sometimes poorly written rules, has caused problems. And so they are going through a process now of developing these rules and strengthening them so that we do believe that they may need to manage the use of the Attorney General, but they do. The board is quite concerned that it has the availability of their advice. That's a long-winded answer to, are they being sued for actions taken when they had the advice of their attorney? I guess the answer is yes.
So we're not really immune
from lawsuits if we counsel people on their retirement.
I don't believe so, and for a lot of other reasons. It's an awfully big system that has a lot of money in it, and people are going to find that attractive to sue.
Okay, thank you.
There was a concern about standby costs, and additional monies were requested in policy option package. We are recommending an approval of an increase in expenditure limitation of $103,500 in this part. We will recommend not approving it in the policy option package. After management's presentation, I believe they were asking for about a total of $140,000 in additional standby duty costs. They subsequently came back to us in communication to the subcommittee saying that upon review of their operations, they can save about 25% of that through changing the way they operated. So here, that's then gave us a recommendation to increase the limitation. In their base budget, there is a very small amount, and this would increase it to a more reasonable amount based on management's representations that there were some cost savings, but standby costs are necessary and real. So we are recommending that shift in the base budget to by adding $103,500.
I think, Madam Chair, I think that's very reasonable because that policy option package 102 referred in large part to the large amount of overtime that is being utilized. So I think it's very reasonable to go ahead and authorize $103,500 in that particular option.
The last adjustment to the base is to reduce the in-state travel costs by one half with directions to utilize video and teleconferencing to conduct educational and other meetings and to reduce the amount of management time spent on the road. We drafted a budget note. Two concerns here. Part of staff is the amount of time and testimony said that top management is out on the road a lot going to these meetings. We have noticed the general concern about the need for management involvement in the agency. So the cost of the travel is sort of incidental to the overall cost of the agency of having management on the road in meetings. Recommendation here is to encourage them to use alternative means to conduct these meetings, teleconferencing and video conferencing particularly. This was at the, I remember the chair had real concerns about them not using this. So this is staff's recommendation. This is exactly 50% of $135,000 or something in the budget. So this is a total reduction then of $786,735 out of the base budget.
That's a net total reduction.
Net total, yes.
Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson.
I'm just looking for reassurance from the committee staff. We're cutting the out-of-state travel, the in-state travel, and we're cutting the telephone and simultaneously encouraging them to do a better outreach in a group counseling setting. Those two appear on their face inconsistent, and I'm looking for some reassurance that that this was thoroughly discussed with the management of the agency. I note that, and thank you for calling our...
Don't monkey around with PUC.
If you wanted our attention, you certainly got it.
Thank you for calling our attention to the fact that it was the agency that offered up 12 positions out of the counseling, and we're taking less than half of what they offered up. But I'm looking for your reassurance that by cutting the out-of-state travel and diminishing the telecommunications and asking them simultaneously to do better outreach, resolve that inconsistency for me.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, members of the committee. I'd be happy to. In this budget request, they because of the base budget and building and adding on, telecommunications is $949,000 in the budget. They're estimated in this biennium, they are estimating expenditures of $525,000. We know that the telephone rates are going to go down, so we are recommending $525,000 left so that that helps, I hope, resolve that inconsistency. Also, some experience later on in the biennium, if the need arises for additional expenditure limitation for telecommunications because of following this direction, then certainly they can come to the emergency board. In fact, we probably will expect to see them before the emergency board is. You'll see later on, I'm recommending no money for policy option packages that are tied to prospective legislation. Any number of bills are out there that would affect PERS and its management and its operations. We know that once all those bills pass or don't pass, whatever passes, management can evaluate the impact on the agency and then come forward with the request for staffing limitation that would be needed to implement those bills. So this isn't to say that, you know, it's you'll never get another dollar. We expect them, if the need arises, to come forward to the emergency board, and with the knowledge and understanding that it is no fault of their own.
Thank you.
So that gets us, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that gets us through the base budget. And we might then, if you go to page 2 of my memorandum, adjustments to program option packages. Without going through the packages in great detail, package 101, we would recommend the approval of that. This is to continue the June 2000 board position. Our only recommendation is that we reduce the amount by $494 to reduce reduction in PERS contributions rates. Package 102 was to make adjustments to the current service level. We would recommend approval of $642,955 of that request. The difference of the amount is zeroing out that portion for AG and shift differential that we provided for in the base, and $1,250 of 1% co-chairs reduction for services and supplies.
No, Dallas, Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. That's in addition to the $103,500 of addition for overtime that's added back over in at the bottom of page 1. Is that correct?
Right. The $172,000 is what we are taking out of this whole package, and we're restoring the $103,000.
I see. Okay, fine. Thank you.
Package 103 is to add additional staff and reclassify positions for the Oregon Savings Growth Plan. We are recommending this not be approved at this time. We believe that reviews requested in budget notes should be completed before additional staffing or position reclassifications in this area are approved. And I've referred you to the budget note and the deferred compensation plan. Package 104 is to provide additional expenditure limitation for personnel reclassifications. Again, staff is not recommending approval for the same reasons that we recommended not approving package 103. A thorough review of the agency's classifications and operations should be done before these are approved. Package 105 is to add staff and reclassify a position for government relations. We are recommending you approve this with a $367 reduction for the reduction in the PERS rates. The increasing number of appeals being processed and the much-needed changes and additions to the rules are expected to continue in the need for permanent staff, and the position reclassification is understood, and staff is recommending approval of those.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dukes.
Because I haven't successfully found all these in the book, this one isn't jogging my memory. Government relations, that's a typical type of government relations position. I may have a little difficulty cutting out 5 one-on-one counselors and adding a government relations person.
This is not adding one, it's just reclassifying what is called that position. This person, in addition to government relations, which means being down here to respond to legislative requests about information on various bills, this person is also responsible for the hearings that are conducted, the appeals hearings and rulemaking hearings. So it isn't, I think I understand where you're coming from with respect to what the typical government relations person.
A lobbyist.
That is not this position. This position's function has a lot more to do than lobbying and
rules coordinating.
Rules coordinating. It does a lot of rules and handles it, case appeals. And
strange job classification.
A multifaceted individual with increasing responsibilities, and that's why the request for the reclassification.
I wonder if there's so much trouble down here. Okay.
And Hayden.
Well, as you know, over the years, there's been a good deal of legislative concern about lobbyists for agencies who are supported by taxpayer dollars. I share that concern. And I'm wondering if it's possible to stipulate in reclassifying this position that this person would provide information to agencies only at the to committees only at the request of the committee. That is, they could not on their own authority appear and testify, but if requested by a committee, they could.
I think I would have some difficulty with that. The one thing we keep saying about this agency is that we don't have enough information from them. And I think that if that meant that we got even less, we'd have even more difficulty. There are things that happen within agencies, and I don't know enough to ask sometimes. And so, granted, they spend a lot more time on the hallway than they ought to, but I'm just afraid it would give us less information.
Dallas, would you like to comment on Representative Hayden's thought?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, members of the subcommittee. I know of this person in this position, and my response is that they generally respond when requested, that they're not, he's not knocking on doors. Your staff has been able to get a lot of information through this person. That is his primary function, at least during session, is to be responsive to legislative requests. And I say that it is responsive to legislative requests. I can give you a simple example is that I prepare the fiscal impact statements for the various bills, including, you know, the tier three bills and the like. And it's been very responsive and helpful in getting the information so that we can continue to do our work. So I do not believe that this position of this person and this function is one that goes out and knocks on doors to think, I got a good bill to sell you, but more they're responsive to provide information to members and committees as upon request.
Madam Chair.
President Hayden.
My next question would be, you're describing an individual rather than a job classification, a position or an FTE. When that person retires or moves on, would the next person take the same attitude, or would they be more aggressive in pursuing perceived agency goals?
I need to be so bold as to recommend that maybe during that classification review, we look at that position to make sure that it clearly states the responsibilities are to be responsive as opposed to be an advocate.
Thank you.
Would that suffice?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Hayden. Representative Johnson.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I would certainly be happier doing it that way. I agree with Senator Dukes that this is an agency that I think we need to know more about, not less about, although I also share Senator Dukes' problem with this title. I think this is a very odd title. Maybe that could also be looked at during the reclass reviews.
Okay.
For me, package 106 is to add limited duration staff and new document billing equipment. We're recommending approval with a $1,111 reduction to reduce PERS contribution rate, and the co-chair's 1% reduction in services and supplies. Workload demands and the equipment needs are there. And we're recommending approval of that. Package 107 is to add a retirement counselor for death services. We are not recommending approval. First, to it, you have somewhere here that suggested changes in result that would result from the reduction of 5 counselor positions. They intend to change this delivery services model. And maybe this workload can be accommodated as part of the change. It can also be part of the review of the classification and agency structure. This is not to preclude that after the review, that they may, the review may find additional staffing may be warranted in some areas, but there at least we would have much fuller documentation, better understanding of all the needs. Package 108. Was to add staff for internal audit and risk management services. This is basically to beef up management where it's been stretched very thin in the past. We are recommending approval with a $1,366 reduction for reduced PERS contribution and co-chair's 1% reduction services and supplies. these additional resources are needed to deal with the growth of emergency operations and the number of issues that need to be addressed. And we also recommend these positions be included in the classification and management structure review. So that these are the five positions: internal audit and risk management. We felt are needed, so we were recommending approval with that modification. The remaining three packages, 113, 114, 116, relate to services that would be required if certain bills pass as they were introduced. We are not recommending approval of any of those for the simple reason that the bills could take different turns during the session, and we think it's more appropriate that after session is over, all bills that affect the operation of PERS, management then look at it and come forward with any requests that that it need either for limitation or staffing or both as a result of legislation that's passed during session. They're caught, unfortunately, they're caught in a predicament where in part of the budget preparation, they're required to submit their program option packages for any bills that have been, that management would or the board would consider to be introduced, and then budget management picks and moves forward with some of them. I'm consistent with the prior session where this happened, and I also recommended not approving and pending the results of all legislation that has passed. So my recommendation for those three is not to approve them. The end result would be, if you look at the cover sheet, it looks like this. Would be other funds expenditure limitation of $39,486,795, I guess the number, and 218 positions of 216.08 FTE. The other funds limitation, as we mentioned, would be separated in four line items in the budget bill. $1 limitation for the PERS pension administration, the $1,000,004 for debt service, $1,000,004 something for deferred compensation plan, and the balance for the other administration of the agency. Also in the budget bill, we would include the that section that was proposed by Representative Hill's subcommittee with respect to the Oregon pension administration system. And the budget report would include the three budget notes, one directing PERS to reduce travel time and costs by using video teleconferencing. The budget note with respect to the review of classifications and management structure as amended by the committee. And then the budget note recommending the audit committee conduct an evaluation of the administration of the deferred compensation plan. Again, these three budget notes have been approved by co-chairs. That is staff's recommendation, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate your work on this.
I just say, Madam Chair, I think that I've been involved both professionally, well, only professionally at this particular point. I haven't ever received actual counseling regarding my own personal retirement under PERS, and I think we probably, as a result of our service to the state, all had certain conflicts of interest relative to the whole PERS issue. But I have been involved in the programs, presentation, the one-on-one counseling with clients, constituents, so forth, and I believe that the video and teleconferencing, particularly the video conferencing, could be absolutely very, very worthwhile. It wouldn't take a great deal to produce a group of videos that would answer the frequently asked questions that people could go ahead and they could then actually put those eventually online so that you could toggle those onto your computer and actually watch those on the computer. And if you say, well, wait a minute, I know all of that stuff. I've been reading my PERS sheets all this time, and I know that, and they can move on to video number two or video number three or go to the frequently asked questions. And I think we underestimate the potential savings to ourselves of using the video and teleconferencing, and I believe that we're going to find that it's very appropriate to do this and move that direction.
Any other discussion?
I will move then, Madam Chair, that we approve the recommendations of the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Haney.
And following Representative Butler's statement that we're all involved in this, are any conflicts of interest necessary by... I think it stands on its face that we're all involved in the PERS system. Well, not necessarily. Do we declare?
I don't think we stand to gain or lose anything on this bill, so individually, and that's
I think it's assumed that we're FERS members as well. Any objection? So moved.
Besides, we deployed the class.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 5035 to the full committee with due pass recommendation as amended.
As amended.
Representative
Dallas will get the amendments. Dallas will get the amendments, and I'd just like to thank Dallas and everyone involved. Of course, so hard on this budget. Recommended we move to full committee. Any discussion? Any objections?
And you included the words and other non-core amendments.
Thank you, Dallas. A lot of work. I appreciate it.
Very good work.
We'll close the work session on House Bill 5035 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 5508. Oh, I should have taken a break. Is the committee all right if we file ahead? Good morning, Lauren.
We're doing
5508 because we need to get working on the fee bill. So we will.
Okay, you get to a vote, Madam Chair. Give me a few minutes before you get to a vote.
Yes. I'm sorry, and I'm going to break the word in behind. Okay, all right. We'll take a 2-minute break just so we can get organized.